This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 242 for Monday, August 21st, 2017. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me tonight, for the first time in well over a year, we just discovered in pre-show, Ryan Murphy of Gamers Inn and Zombies Ate My Podcast. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you. It is weird to kind of like, you know, look back and then search and find out when the last time I was on, and to find out it's been more than a year just feels like, holy crap, what happened to the last year?
Yeah, and I find that the guests that I do not have on all the time are often about a year when they're coming on the show. It's often Game of Thrones that brings them back, mm-hmm. as it will be tonight. But because I've got a regular kind of cast of co-hosts that I rotate through once a month, it tends to keep the same people on the show more often than not. But this is great. It's and the other thing too is that you and I talk not every day, but really close to it, you know, via Messenger and stuff like that. So
yeah,
it feels like we've just been in touch this whole time, which we have. But it's like, really, wait a minute, when's the last time I actually talked to Ryan? Even in like a Skype meeting, it's been a long time.
Yeah, it's because we work together on projects. Yeah, so like the last thing we want to do is go to work all day and then come home and be like, oh great, I get to spend an hour again with Ryan. I don't blame you.
Oh, I thought you were talking about you talking with spending time with me. Right, I see.
No, no, no.
You were doing the self depreciating thing.
Okay. I'm the obnoxious one. Yeah, okay. Don't worry about it.
No, it's all good. So what's new, man? It's like what have you been up to?
So Caden's a year and a half. That is certainly something that I've been up to. He's running around like crazy. Baby number two is happening in, gosh, I'm like on call. Like I'm right now, like the baby's due on Saturday.
Okay, that's soon.
Be any day. This episode could be posted and everything I'm saying right now could be wrong. The baby could be a week late, who knows? But anyways, yes, baby number two is around the corner. You know, Gamers Inn is going strong. We'll talk probably more about the shows at the end. And, you know, Zamp has been also going strong, taking a bit of a hiatus, but I believe we're going to be back this week.
Nice.
Fear the Walking Dead season 3, speaking of Hell on Earth, it's good. It's actually pretty great. You can skip the first two seasons. The third one has like a really good setup with a really good, conflict between, you know, some real racist white people and some, really upset Native Americans. And they just trade blows. And that's kind of, it's interesting. It's a conflict that you wouldn't necessarily think to see, you know,
unless you're watching the news.
Yeah, and you know what, in this maybe here in Canada it's a little different, it's a little more front and center, but in the States, I was talking to Lou and Bob about it, my co-host on Zamp, and in the States it's kind of like it isn't as front and center, like it's not as big a controversy, like it's still bad, like it's not solved. It's not like they solved it and wiped their hands and walked away. No, it's still, you know, this very unfair situation. But I mean, I don't know. I was joking around with Lou and Bob, not joking, but just saying like the only thing I know about, you know, Native Americans in the States is that, like, you know, is from The Simpsons, you know, which is incredibly sad because it's basically just a bunch of jokes. But here in Canada, it's like this kind of makes sense because I where I grew up was just outside, not just outside, but, you know, close enough to a reservation that you would interact and see, you know, Indigenous people here in Canada all the time. So it was interesting to see season 3, and I even have a friend who's very much interested in history and culture and the political side of it, and I said, you got to watch this because I think you'll either really hate it or you'll kind of like that someone's looking at this. So Fear the Walking Dead season 3 is really good. You guys should go watch that. Don't watch the first two seasons because then you probably won't watch the third one. So it's really good. I don't know, have you been watching Fear the Walking Dead or The Walking Dead at all?
No, I stopped watching The Walking Dead. Man, maybe the same season that they got to the jail. Like, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
The show started to not be an escape for me. Like, I just, when the show was as stressful or more stressful than my real life, I was like, you know, I'd rather watch something online like Daredevil or Defenders or something. And I mean, well, spoiler free, but we'll get to Defenders later on, because I really want to talk to Brockett about that, because he's a comic head. And I know that he'll have some opinions. But like all that kind of stuff, that tends to be where I go for my entertainment. I've been skewing away from the zombies. I've never been a super big zombie fan anyway. I did like the first couple seasons of The Walking Dead, just because it was so different and it was on the edge of your seat. And it was really, I really found that it got to me, which I thought was cool, because most of the time media doesn't do that. But no, I've not watched any of those. And for those that are wondering, Lou that Ryan mentioned is Lou Page from
Oh, the same Lou,
podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, same Lou, same podcast, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've not delved into, I keep on wanting to try some of the more different stuff that Lou has recommended, like the Santa Clara Diet.
Yeah, it's good.
Or Santa Clarita or Santa Clara?
Santa Clarita, which is a Netflix original, so you can watch it anytime. That show's really easy to digest. 20 minutes, you're in, you're out. Drew Barrymore is fantastic. Timothy Olyphant is amazing. I'll watch him.
I love Timothy Olyphant as well. The issue that I have is that normally when I'm watching those shows, it's my dinner break. So it's just like, well, do I really want to watch this while I'm eating? And it's usually a no.
It's definitely usually a no. And honestly, these days, no matter what you're watching, it can be kind of tough, because there's always a scene that pops up that's going to ruin your dinner. And I mean, we're going to talk about Game of Thrones in a little bit. And something that I did this year, which was kind of out of the norm, is I added HBO to my television package, which was not as expensive as I thought. You know, we always kind of squawk like, oh, you know, in the States, they have HBO Go. We're both in Canada. Right. They don't have that here, which is $10 a month. You know, works out to be about $20 to watch Game of Thrones live, or when they go on the service.
For the 2 months that it's on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I was behind on Game of Thrones. Like, I just caught up last weekend. And what I did was I waited until I was going to be able to watch it in 1 month. And I added it for about $20, which was nice, because it comes with the live channel plus all the on-demand stuff. So I was able to watch all the old episodes I missed on demand, and then watch the live episodes as they were happening, which was weird. But I honestly also started watching The Leftovers, which is a show that I've been keeping an eye on, and that people have been saying is quote unquote good. Okay. It's a good show. It's actually really, really well put together. But again, it's not a show you'd want to watch on your dinner break, because it's about the rapture and how people react to it. If you ever watch Lost, it's by the same producers, Damon Lindelof, who did Lost. And it certainly has that vibe, but a more depressing vibe, like real depressing. And the first two episodes kind of like hit it home, very mysteriously depressing. And then there's an episode later on in season one, which is like, no, this is depressing. You were watching a show that is like, if this were to happen, it's very like, it takes itself very seriously in that, like, yo, this is exactly what happened if the rapture happened. But that means you can imagine how freaking sad that is. The rapture being people, the story is 2% of the population of the world just vanishes in an instant on a specific day.
Wow.
And it explores the social impact of that, the religious impact, the political impact, and how governments sort of handle that with like payouts and benefits, and cults spring up, religions fall apart. You know, how does science explain it? And, you know, the first episode is basically like wrapping up a science panel, and it's like, yo, we don't know what happened. We can't explain it. Mm. And they have, I don't know, quote unquote, fun with it. It's not really fun. It's just them kind of like pulling back the layers of humanity, as they say, like, you know, you think about the science of it, like, well, someone disappears while driving their car is just going to keep going because no one's there to stop it. Or, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but there are other instances that come up that deal with the rapture. There's a couple episodes that kind of explore that day again. And what they showcase is like, holy shit, I didn't even think about that. That'd be terrible.
Yeah.
So it's good to have a cleanser with that one.
Yeah. And that, and I remember the driving thing. I remember a trailer for this, I think. I think I saw a teaser trailer about this a year ago or more. I didn't get through the first season of Lost, so.
Oh, well.
It may not be for me. But at the same time, this seems to me more intriguing than just people stranded on a desert island with a smoke monster, right? Like
the thing that got me was there's three seasons. It's done.
Oh,
it
okay.
finished, and it's an HBO run.
Yeah.
There's 10 episodes per series. The last series has 8 episodes, and each, and I don't believe it's a spoiler, but each season takes place in a different location. Same characters,
right,
but different location. And they explain that in a way of the story, from what I understand. I haven't made it to the second season, but
right.
I tweeted, like, you know, 2017 Ryan tweets to 2013 everybody else, like, holy crap, The Leftovers is depressing, and everyone's like, yeah, just wait.
Mm.
I'm like, great. So I don't know, like, it's one of those questions of, like, you talk about escapism with Walking Dead and how it got, it stopped being that for you, and mm-hmm. I'm like, you kind of wonder, like, why, like, the story of The Leftovers is interesting, but, like, why are we watching this kind of stuff that just, I guess it makes you feel, and that's kind of the point, right? It's like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah,
it's one of those conversations.
Yeah, I've finally dug into House of Cards, and I'm pacing that. That's not something I can binge. Like, that's definitely, that's a one a day sort of show. And I finally started watching that recently. And for whatever reason, that to me has that kind of draw. It has that kind of, like, escapism into a, I think it's just because even though it's set in the real world, it's just very well crafted. Mm-hmm. In terms of the culture and the, and it's also very well written in terms of, you don't, like, you're not smacked over the head with things, like, you really have to pay attention. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I think maybe it's just that it's not a stressful show, you know, whereas Walking Dead and that kind of stuff tends to be more stressful. I, you know, and we're going to get to this in a second, but Game of Thrones, I find the same way. Less this season, but more in I would say season 5, like, there's a couple of points where I was on the edge of my chair, you know, with Game of Thrones, and that's why I like it, because, like you said, like, it makes you feel like you really get pulled into the world. But before we get to that, I should remind everybody about the changes to the Citadel Cafe Patreon page. So if you are currently a patron, thank you. But please pop over there and double check your reward choice. You're still a patron, but you haven't checked your reward, which means that you may not have access to the Discord, which is now where the former Slack chat is located. So everybody's in the Discord having a blast, and actually I really, really appreciate you actually, Ryan, mm-hmm. mentioning Discord to me and getting me to switch over, but we still haven't really translocated everybody from one place to the next. And so yeah, if you're feeling like, it's like, hey, why the Slack is really quiet, it's like, no, it's quiet, it's because no one's there, everybody's in the Discord. So if you go and you just change your reward selection, because people that were currently on the old reward are now selected as no reward, you just have to select the new one, and then you're automatically going to get invited into the Discord. So should be pretty straightforward. And if you're not a Discord user, then yes, you have to use another email and another password, but, like, that's par for the course. People should be used to that, I think, by now.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. Anyway, so that's my little spiel off the top. But before we get into Game of Thrones, I, of course, have to mention to everybody, especially because we're recording this on Monday night, we are going to get into spoilers. There's no way to talk about this episode without spoiling it. Unfortunately, usually on Wednesday nights when we record the Citadel Cafe, people have usually seen the show, so it's less of a problem. But this is probably going to get edited tonight and maybe posted tomorrow. So please, if you have not seen Game of Thrones, bail now. Come back later. You will thank yourself and hopefully thank us. The issue that I have is that I got spoiled on some stuff today. So I'm going to get this out of the way because I don't want this to shadow my entire thought process while we talk about this show. I have been watching Game of Thrones and doing the Citadel Cafe on it for now. This is the sixth year, because we did two seasons one year. But this is the sixth year that we've done this. I have definitely learned that on Monday morning, when I get up and I have to go find a way to watch Game of Thrones, to stay the hell off of social media. I don't check Twitter, I don't check Facebook, I don't do anything, because I have been spoiled before. It only takes one, and then you realize, okay, new rule, until I see Game of Thrones, I'm just not going to be on social media. I might post to it, but I won't read anything. My inbox is not something I can avoid. I have to do business, and I have to check my inbox, and I get a number of different newsletters and things, including one from ArtStation. I read my email this morning, and I got a spoiler for one of the last scenes in this episode in the form of a fan art painting. Which
really?
Means, yeah, which means that this artist would have had to watch Game of Thrones, I'm assuming last night, immediately paint this piece and post it online within 12 hours of watching HBO. So again, everybody that's not watched the show is clear. It was the dragon. He did a painting called Grieving Mother, and it was a blonde and very clearly a Daenerys-type person with a big black dragon bleeding out on the ground. And I was furious. Now, it wasn't exactly as they had depicted, because there was, like, I was just, my inbox is supposed to be safe. Now, last week, I called it. I said that I thought this was going to happen. But still, you want to watch the hour and 12 minutes of Game of Thrones, one of the longest episodes they've ever done, and not know what's coming.
You kind of, especially like that. Like, this show, the spoilers of this show are not necessarily like reading a wiki description of what happened in the episode, because you can read a wiki description and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But then it's those moments, one specific moment in this episode with the dragon, that when spoiled is kind of like personally, I'm a terrible person. Don't have that big a connection to these dragons. It's like, I know they've been around since season one and they're cute and they're cuddly and they eat people and they turn them on fire. But I'm like, oh, I kind of figured that was going to happen. It was either going to be the dragon or is it going to be Daenerys or it was going to be Jon. But it's much easier to kill, you know, one third of your CG budget. It's just much easier.
Yeah,
next season's going to be so much easier to shoot because you only got it. Well, no, that's not true, I guess. They resurrected the CG budget. It's probably cost more now.
Yeah. And here's the issue that I had is, of course, the dragon in the picture looked like Drogon. And I was like, no,
would be bad.
Don't do that to me. Like, to me, Daenerys and Drogon are almost the same character in a lot of ways, or he certainly represents a side of her. And I would hate to see Drogon die. So having that whole dragon thing, it really just pissed me off. Like, it's a beautiful painting, and it's one of those things where, like, if you just wait and you
like
post it on Wednesday, like a week, even 3 days, because everybody that cares about spoilers watches this show within 48 hours, right? Because otherwise you just can't go on the freaking internet, right? Because ultimately Snarky McSnark Pants is going to ruin it for you if you do, right? So, like, people are watching it as soon as they can if they care that much. And I just don't understand. Like, I was reading Twitter this evening, now that I'd seen the show, and Patrick Beja had made a tweet saying that people were posting with WoW content but spoiling Game of Thrones by making WoW jokes about dragons and stuff.
I've seen Hearthstone as well.
Yeah, so he got spoiled on it. It's like, I mean, the guy is not... He's online looking at WoW content, which means he's not anticipating being spoiled on Game of Thrones that he probably hasn't had time to watch. Like, it's just, that kind of stuff is just... It's infuriating to me. It's like, is nothing sacred? Like, I don't understand why people have to do this. Now, I understand it's a first world problem when we're talking about an entertainment show about dragons, but, like, it's just one of those things where it's like, I imagine that some of the people that get the most upset about this kind of thing are the people that make Game of Thrones. Like,
can you
imagine, like, they put all this effort and time into keeping things secret. Like, I don't know any of this stuff before it happens, right? Like, I'm getting spoiled after HBO has aired the show. I am not seeing or hearing about a lot of leaks of the episode ahead of time. Like, people tend to be respectful enough in a world that they could probably get it if they wanted to before it airs. But they're not respecting any of the things after that. It's like this. I mean, I even, you know, well, I think Walking Dead was when I started realizing it, that when shows were on TV, you had to be off Twitter because people are just like, oh my God, somebody just died. It's like, well,
yeah,
I'm watching it. The Walking Dead is like, well, you might be watching it an hour, you know, depending on how people have, like, not TiVo, but, like, you know, if you've got, like, on demand and you've paused it to go to the bathroom and you come back and it's not at that point yet, you could potentially, like, see it 15 minutes before it happens. And
well, even worse with HBO shows, because if you watch HBO live, there's no commercials. So if you start that a half hour late, you are a half hour behind the rest of the world.
Wow.
So I was even watching it, and I wasn't on Twitter because I didn't want to be spoiled. But it's like, these days, you have to be very careful. And honestly, a lot of the folks who post this, and I'm not going to name names, but I can just picture it in my head as to, like, if someone got upset, like, for posting or retweeting or whatever, and it's like, lol, don't you know not to go on the internet after Game of Thrones? You should be watching it as soon as possible. It's like, you know, I work Monday mornings.
Yeah.
You know, if I wasn't able to watch it live, I wouldn't have been able to do the show, you know, because I would be watching Game of Thrones right now. And I'm not one to spoil stuff on a public format.
Yeah.
Because I have two podcasts to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, with Walking Dead, we spoil it on the show. With any video games or video game related stuff, we spoil it on Gamers In. Like,
right.
So I kind of understand that I have an outlet. And you have an outlet, but for those people who just want to scream from the rooftops that, you know, one of the dragons died and they turned it into a zombie dragon, it's like, I guess I understand your problem, but why you gotta ruin it for, if you had done that to them, they would have been upset.
Yeah, and how hard is it to type 6 characters in front of a tweet spoiler, you know, before, or GOT spoiler, you know? But here's the thing, is that it wasn't a tweet. I wasn't online.
No.
I was reading my email. And it wasn't even, this is the thing, it wasn't even something I was reading. It was a picture. It was an image. And that's the thing, is like, if we're getting to the point now where artists are going to go ahead and spoil stuff like that, it's like, well, I might not be following you on social media, which is, you know, hey, by the way, I'm an art book publisher. You might want to, you know, keep in mind who's reading your, you know, your social media and who's seeing your posts on these different networks. Anyway, I keep on saying social media, but it was an email, like, you know, and it's an email newsletter I get for when artists I follow post new paintings. So, mm-hmm. you know, like, just sit on it for 48 hours. My God. Anyway, I don't want to talk about this for the whole night for spoilers.
No. We got to show spoiler. You could have this conversation every time there's a monumental moment.
But the email thing was what was kind of really caught me off guard. But
that is frustrating.
The thing about this episode, actually, that I thought after, in hindsight, you know, looking back at it and reading the wiki kind of synopsis to kind of refresh my brain, was we really only had two locations. You know, we had a breath in Dragonstone, but really the bulk of the acting and the bulk of the drama was happening either north above the wall, which is the Beyond the Wall is the title of the episode, or it was happening at Winterfell. So it was very much snow the whole time. It was all winter and cold and gray. The whole episode was just blue and gray the whole time.
And made me sad.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a interesting kind of take, because certainly the first four, not so much last one, but certainly the first four, we've been bouncing all over the place. There's been Dragonstone, there's been Winterfell, there's been King's Landing, then there was Highgarden. Like, we were always in 3 to 4 very distinct geographic locations. Old Town was the other one. So you're just, you're all over the place. And this time, granted, there's a lot of ground covered, but we really only had the two locales. And I thought that was really interesting. And it kind of allowed them to push the events and the story of Daenerys and Jon and their surrounding supporting characters much farther in one episode than they have been previously, which I thought was really cool. One thing we can kind of get out of the way, there's a small kind of tension bit between Sansa and Arya. And I'm not sure how I feel about it. I'm not a fan. I don't yet know where it's going. We didn't get enough of it to kind of get a sense of that. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of cheesed off that it's caused this tension and that Arya has fallen for Littlefinger's little ploy, at least it appears. I figured she would be smarter than that.
Yeah. The thing that gets me with this is that it either seems like the show is setting up Arya as falling into this childish trap, or it's setting up, you know, Sansa being like, oh, woe is me, I was just a child. Mm-hmm. And they're playing, like, Littlefinger, I think, has set that up. But, you know, Arya has proven to be this cunning, you know, person who I highly doubt would have left her mask just lying around. And I highly doubt Arya would be this upset with her sister, you know, at this point in time. Like, I'm kind of thinking that Arya knows Littlefinger's a little dink,
mm-hmm.
And she is playing into this trap, and then at the last minute will be to Sansa, okay, now we pull up, and you can finally see that Littlefinger is the problem here,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Littlefinger has been, well, he's got his little fingers and everything. I don't know if that's where he gets his name, or maybe he has just a little finger, but I really do believe that Arya has showcased, you know, she's much smarter than what she's doing now. And I think her getting on the bad side and threatening to kill her sister is just really unlike Arya, because as a Stark, she's raised to kind of like family first.
Yeah.
And I don't think she's that cold blooded, you know,
I don't think she's a threat physically to Sansa, but I feel like, you know, she's got no love for her older sister in terms of the positioning that Sansa has always tried to do. And I want, the more that you speak to it, the more that I really think and hope that that's what's going on.
Oh,
I think
she
oversold it to Sansa to make sure that Sansa went straight to Littlefinger. So then Arya could force Littlefinger to make a move.
I think it's either what it looks like, and it's bad writing and poor character development, because it's a step back for both of them.
Right.
Or it's clever writing, and it's Arya seeing that Sansa... I still think Arya thinks Sansa is this weak character, even though she's been through so much, because Arya really doesn't know what Sansa's been through. I still think Arya thinks, you know, lowly of her older sister, but mm-hmm. she's using this moment to play on Sansa's, you know, weaknesses and need for approving Littlefinger is just to kind of, I don't know. I just get the sense that this show has been very smart this season. You know,
yeah, this would be very,
be such a misstep.
It would be unlike season 7. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And you know, having, I'm sure. Yeah. I've been listening to Citadel Cafe every week as you guys post. And, I've noticed that there's a theme of like, everybody is super fast, super quick. Everything moves very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And this show hasn't been afraid to move quickly this season. Sorry. It's almost like it's been a real slap in the face every episode. It's like, oh, yeah. Wow, they are not going to spend half a season getting from point A to point B. They are just literally going to, you're done. You're there. Yeah. You're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
And
which is confusing.
It's very confusing. And that's why I think we're having trouble with the Arya Sansa thing, because normally they would have taken half a season to develop this weird thing. And this is the clever trick that they're doing with this season, where as opposed to other stuff where they're just like, nah, we're just going to skip through the travel. With this, I think they're hiding stuff from the viewers, which is Arya's plan. They're hiding that from us in order to skip a lot of filler that would have had us going back to Winterfell to show Arya and Sansa and Littlefinger playing their game
mm-hmm.
for 8 episodes. In this case, they're giving it to us what felt like one. This is the mm-hmm. first time I've really gotten the sense that, you know, Arya and Sansa have been conflicting. I guess it was at the end of last episode and the beginning of this one.
Yeah.
So it's either terrible writing and they just wanted to throw Arya and Sansa and Littlefinger in, or it's got a point and it's going somewhere, and I think the payoff will be next episode. If there's no payoff next episode, then it was probably just they got their B writers on this subplot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree with you on the pace of everything, and I'm hoping that we don't have a cliff, because I mean next episode is the season finale, and I'm hoping that the pace, if this is true, continues and we get a resolution to what Arya, Littlefinger, and Sansa are doing this season, and not get a cliffhanger there, or at the very least have Sansa open her eyes, and then maybe the cliffhanger is the fate of Littlefinger, versus having yet more tension be kind of left over the course of the year until they make the second part or the season 8 or the second half of season 7, however you want to look at it.
I think the point of this season has been uniting everyone against the White Walkers, and the end, I think you will get your resolution with Littlefinger, because whatever Arya is planning, or whether it's just like a sisterly spat, will be solved by, oh, that's an undead thing. I guess we have no choice but to work together because it's real. Like, I don't think anyone believes it besides the folks who have seen it. Mm-hmm. When you look them, you know, straight in the eyes, and you know, if they haven't seen it, it's like, well, I kind of believe you, but I'm really just here to kind of forward my own, you know, motives. Like Littlefinger, yeah, he believes that there's a threat, but he's still trying to get at something. You know, he's trying to get a connection with the Queen of the North or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think once they bring, because they got to go through Winterfell to get to King's Landing from the North. Once they bring that dead thing through, it's going to be like, everyone's like, oh yes, I get it now. I'm going to stop worrying about going after Sansa, and I'm going to make sure my knights are ready to go, because if Winterfell falls, everything falls.
Well, see, that's the thing. I don't think they're going through Winterfell. I think they're sailing. I think they're sailing down the coast Eastwatch to Dragonstone. And I mean, which leads me to into the whole pace and the distance. So with Jon's story, Jon being beyond the wall with Tormund and Gendry and a bunch of other folks, and there's a series of transitions where Jon and his band are pinned down by a bunch of wights and the White Walkers. They are there at least overnight. It appears, yeah. I'm assuming it has to be longer, because if you take a look at the map, granted, where he goes from the wall above the wall, beyond the wall, is not terribly far. It's still far enough, especially with cold and how difficult the terrain would be.
And how colder it would be at night, right?
Yeah. But you look at the distance between Eastwatch and Dragonstone, it's half the bloody continent. Like, Daenerys just hops on her dragon, and it's basically like taking a plane. You know, like, in the show, it feels like she's there over the course of a day, you know, because we only get one nightfall, you know. I can't imagine that they were there for days with... No. Because, I mean, and even just the one night felt long. You're just kind of like, so these White Walkers, these guys that can freeze things with their touch and can bring people back to dead, can't take four steps down to a lake and freeze it so that their bad guys can cross it and kill the good guys? Like, it just, there's a huge hole for me with the fact that it took the Hound throwing rocks like a moron at these wights to make them realize that the lake had frozen over again. Like, these guys are made, the White Walkers are basically made of ice. Like, they control ice. How did they not just, like, we've seen them make windstorms of snow. Like, how did they not just freeze the lake again? So stuff like that made this whole wait overnight thing, like, really, really bizarre. It was a way to bring Daenerys and Drogon and the dragons up to the wall so that she could witness the whites, that she could take part in the battle. But it just goes back to kind of undoing a conversation where in the last episode they agreed that she shouldn't go. And it was just, it was dumb. Like, she should have just been there in the first place, and then it would have been a much cleaner, much more interesting sort of situation. Even if she didn't go above the wall, like, even if she went with the dragons and she was at the wall, but for her own safety, they convinced her to stay at the wall and not continue past. Gendry riding back a half day's ride to get Daenerys at the wall would have made way more sense than him getting back there, sending a raven. The raven then has to fly half the continent to get to Dragonstone. So, like, I realize this is a kind of like a weird logistic nitpicky thing, but I felt really confused by how the show was depicting the passage of time versus where everybody was located. And you're just like, wait a minute. Like, it really didn't make sense to me.
I think, you know, when you look at the logistics of the space that they're working with, and you start to overthink it, I think that's where a lot of folks, you know, lose the show. Mm-hmm. You know, because really, if you just trust the creators and kind of just do a blind trust of like, okay, this makes sense in their heads, therefore I'm just going to trust that it makes sense in the reality of the world they're living in. Mm-hmm. You know, dragons fly fast. Got it. But it's just nice to actually see things moving quickly, like dragons flying. Yeah, that makes sense. They move really quick. And I think logistically, for the way they portrayed it, yes, Daenerys at the wall would have made more sense. However, Daenerys is a character who's very set in her ways and may have been growing closer to Jon as they spent time together, still didn't feel like she even needed to trust, you know, blindly this guy who shows up and says, look, there's an army of dead. You need to forget about Cersei. mm-hmm. you know, which just throws her off her dragon and just like, oh, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, Cersei, you just finished telling me she's a mad woman, you know? And Tyrion's been saying to her, like, look, you need to be more careful. And Tyrion was saying to her, don't go. And it's just, yeah, I think for character-wise, it makes sense. Logistically, in trying to show to the viewers how people were moving so quickly, it would have made more sense if she was, you know, even nearby. You know, you could probably try to over-explain it so that she did go to the wall because she did feel some connection to Jon and felt like, okay, you must be telling the truth because you just believe it so damn much. Mm-hmm. And then the cave painting thing. But I don't know. But in the end, I think you get the same result, which is I enjoyed the standoff. I thought that was, you know, very well put in a way that, you know, they're not going to have their White Walker, their big White Walker fight. You know, we got a taste of it last season. Mm-hmm. This season, I think they're saving it for, you know, the finale.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, too, is that, I mean, logistically, they had to do something. Otherwise, the half dozen guys that were left, I mean, there was thousands of these whites.
Yeah.
Like, it just, there's just no way.
It was cool mechanism, right? To kind of have a standoff and a fight with the White Walkers. And when I say finale, I'm talking about, I don't even think we see the White Walkers next episode because they are the slowest things. If there's one thing they couldn't speed up, it was the way the White Walkers, they're like Freddy or Jason. They just walk. They don't, and then maybe they take the long route, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to be around next episode. I think maybe at the very end, it's like, oh shit, they step on some grass and then it turns, you know, turns to snow. Like, that's how HBO should do it. But
yeah.
I don't think you're going to get that big climax. I think next episode is going to be more about, you know, Cersei and that meeting, because they are booking it.
Yeah.
And this, like you said.
And that, to me, this whole ordeal has been a fool's errand. Like, I really think Jon going above the wall to capture a white is ridiculous, you know, and bringing it to Cersei is not, I mean, in my mind, it's not going to do shit all, but at the same time, the show tends to surprise me, and I really can't predict how Cersei is going to react. She's not going to, if they do manage to get the thing in front of her, it's not like she's going to look at it and go, oh, well, I can explain this away. Like, you just can't. Like, it's a talking skull. Because, like, the thing that they brought, it's not like a dude that died recently. It's a CG, you know, like...
It's a walking skeleton.
Yeah, it's a walking skeleton.
And that's why the, you know, when you look at this book series and, or the, I guess the television series, they've painted themselves into a corner where they have this big bat approaching from the north, and they have a bunch of people squabbling over a metal chair.
Yeah.
And you look at that setup and it's really cool. And how else are you going to get to stop to everyone to stop playing, sandblasting in the sandbox or Game of Thrones, right? That's probably the name of the show. How do you get them to stop doing that and pay attention to the big bad? And it's like, you convince them the best way you can is just show them this elusive big bad. Like, the whole point of the White Walkers being up north and then being a myth is so people don't believe it. And then they're caught off guard. I think Cersei is going to take advantage of this? I would be surprised if she didn't, but honestly, like, someone's gonna stab someone in the back. It's not gonna be this episode, it's not gonna be next, but at a certain point, they have two options with this show. They deal with the White Walkers and then they go back to the Game of Thrones and it ends with a big bloody clash.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the White Walkers win and it's the end of the world. That would be a really crappy ending. Would be fitting for this show, but you know, just in that they like to toy with our emotions. But it's one of those things, and you know, they have the standoff, and you know, the no-name characters die, and you get a couple moments of, oh no, don't kill the redhead, oh no, Jon's dead. But they don't stick the landing with that.
Yeah.
They always
Well, you can tell, unfortunately, one of the cues this episode where something either really cool was about to happen or something that you think was going to happen is not, was the music. There's always this big swell and then a big, like, da-dump, you know, when something was going to happen. And that's exactly what happened. You had the big long hang on the water where Jon came out of, and you had the eventual, we're all going to die. Oh no, here's the last look. Here's the slow motion Jon looking at everybody thinking this is the end. And then Daenerys swoops in. Like, I mean, you know, she's coming. You know, and you know when. And that unfortunately was kind of like a, I mean, it was still cool, but it was a recap of what she did with the Lannister army. Like, it was the same kind of entrance. And it's like, okay, well, you could have done it a little bit different. But yeah, like, the show is not surprising me as much.
Why did she bring three dragons to this and only one dragon to the Lannisters?
That I don't know either.
Just so Drogo wouldn't get hit with the ice spear? Is that kind of what the show was going for?
Probably. Well, this is the thing. I mean, I mentioned this last time on Citadel Cafe, is that I really felt like, with all the things that are happening, I didn't necessarily think it was going to happen this season until they talked about this mission beyond the wall. But it's that the White Walkers need to have some sort of big bad, because I'm thinking, like, if Daenerys have got these dragons, and after seeing what they can do, it's like, well, the White Walkers are not going to stand a chance. So they have to have one. And the only way that happens is if one of them dies. And they hinted at it with the Walking Dead giant that they showed earlier this season. And I think that this is going to, I mean, it's going to be cool. We're going to get, you know, we're going to get a frostworm type dragon in Viserion, which is the one that died. I also had a hard time picking out which one died, and they didn't show you the third after the battle. So
yeah,
Drogon was circling around, unless it was Drogon and then I missed the cut and it was a second dragon that we never saw. Because when they were younger, they were very clearly colored.
It was like black, green, and red.
Yeah, white and gold is supposed to be Rhaegal.
So much I pay attention.
Yeah, and then Viserion is the green one. And then Drogon, of course, is the big black one. And I mean, Drogon has always been forefront in all of the CG and all the interaction with Daenerys. But it was easier to see when they were younger, because when they spread their wings or the fins on the back of their neck, the skin color would be kind of more green or gold or red. But now that there's these giant things the size of planes, they all kind of look black. And then they've got like little stripes. Like if you look at it, there's a scene early on this episode. And I realized this because I was looking through for stills for the show art for the podcast. And there's a scene where Tyrion and Daenerys are walking to the dragons, and she takes off, and all three of them take off with her. She walks between Viserion and Rhaegal, and you can see that Viserion has got more of a green kind of pattern down the side of his neck. Mm-hmm. And then Rhaegal is no longer white, but he's still got the gold going on. But it's so subtle that it's really not easy to pick them out. And I wish that Daenerys has got some color in her costumes now. I feel like the Lannister stuff has also been really cool with the red and gold army. They could have had the dragons be really colorful, like maybe not over the top cartoony, but like they really could have been easy to discern on screen. But that could have also
you had some options there.
Yeah, I mean, and that could have also just been something as simple as like, well, we have to kind of keep them similar, otherwise it's just too expensive. And like, I get that there's logistics that come in there, but
it was a good it was a good episode.
I feel like we've been complaining about it, but no, I really liked the fights and the fighting, and like, and this is the thing, like I never once was pulled out of it, but like, oh, that's a really cool CG skeleton. Like the things like this are just looking so good these days.
Oh, that nailed it.
Yeah, like when even the funny moment when he hit the white in the jaw with the rock and the jaw came off, and you're just looking at this white. The way that the eyes are in those things, you still look at it like it's an actor. It's so well done. They did a really good job
with everything. And, you know, the interactions between characters, sometimes with CG, you see that disjointed interaction. Yes. They've really done a great job with this show to have the interactions between, you know, the dead, the White Walkers, and our characters. And when, you know, giant redhead guy, I'm terrible with names, I can't remember his name.
Tormund.
Yeah. When he was being like, he was like, help me, it's like, you felt it. Like, oh my God, he might have died there.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily put it the fault. I didn't want him to die because he's probably one of my favorite characters in the show now. With Jon as well. And you know, Jon surviving the plunge made sense to me, because he is, you know, he's protected. He's not meant to die there. Like, I doubt he was meant to die, you know, in the water. But yeah, when the dragon goes down, like they were telegraphing that with the spears. And then when he goes up and he's getting ready to throw the spear and no one's paying attention to him, which I thought was pretty weird. And then they threw the spear. It's like, you knew one of the dragons was going to die. And there was tension there as you were leading up to it. And it was like, oh God, here it comes. And they take the dragon out. And you feel so bad. And I was joking at the top of the show that it's like, oh, it's one of the dragons, not a big deal. Mm-hmm. But when it happened, you could hear Daenerys' heart breaking. Mm-hmm. And Jon, actually, you could see the connection in his eyes as well. It's like, oh, shit, like, that's a big deal. Mm. It's not just a horse, you know, which this show hates horses. But,
yeah,
you know, now they hate dragons, evidently.
Yeah.
It was a really well put together shot. And you could feel it, because normally when this is going to sound terrible, but normally when an animal or a beast dies in this show, you wince, but you don't feel it because you know it's not real. But
yeah.
And you obviously don't know, you know it's not real when a dragon dies, because dragons don't exist. Yeah. But when it happened, it felt like a character dying. Yeah.
And,
you know,
and the way that they handle it too is that it's the same way that fight scenes go. Like, I bring it back to that scene at the end of Lord of the Rings where Aragorn is fighting one of the Uruk-hai at the river. And there's basically three sword clangs, and then someone loses an arm, and then someone dies. Like, it's just quick, as it probably would be. It's not a sword fight that goes on for 10 minutes with, like, you know, you killed my father, prepare to die, and like all that kind of stuff. It's very, very fast. And I think that that's something that the show does really well, is that there's a fight and someone dies, like bang. And this, the Night King one-shotted the dragon. Like, it wasn't like the dragon got hit and then went down, and then he got overwhelmed, and there's this long drawn out scene. Like, he was dead by the time he hit the ground. He had a hole in the side of him.
Yeah, it was bad.
And I think that it did. I mean, it did a couple of things. I mean, one, I mean, obviously, like you said, it really brings you down a notch as a viewer. But it also illustrates the power of the Night King, because he's not really physically that intimidating. It's the hordes that he raised, you know, in those scenes. Like the scene where they came out of the mountain pass and they were running across the lake, and they had this, like, scrambling, like, what's that one with Brad Pitt, that zombie movie where the zombies are fast?
World War Z.
Yeah. Like, that was terrifying, watching that, because of how fast the zombies were.
Well, the way they surrounded them, like, it was almost like they were planning to trap them, because they easily just, it seems like they easily could have just overrun them, but the White Walkers were legitimately asking they call them the Whites, the zombies, to surround them. And they did successfully, and it kind of backfired with, you know, the lake and stuff, but they kind of figured, like, well, we have all the time in the world. They didn't know they had dragons.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the White Walkers have no idea. That now they obviously do, it's just one of those things that, yeah, another well-crafted scene, kind of like similar to the, you know, the Battle of the Bastards, where they've set up this set piece. And again, it gave us that interaction with the White Walkers that we were craving this season. Mm-hmm. But the thing that gets me too is that we talk about how it moves so quickly. If you're a book reader, you got to be watching the season and being like, okay, I'm seeing all the major plot points, you know, as George R. R. Martin has sort of outlined to the creators. But can you do know that this book that is going to eventually come out for that encompasses the season is going to be a tome. It's not going to be smaller than the other ones.
No,
that's kind of make you very happy the way they're kind of wrapping this show up, and that they're doing the major, you know, plot beats, mm-hmm. but they're not going through all of the book. Like, there's still going to be tons in the book that you're going to be able to only experience in that book. You're mm-hmm. still probably going to get a similar ending or similar path journey. But the fact that you will be able to experience both and have a great time, I think, has got to have book readers very satisfied.
Yeah.
Because they easily could have spread this out.
Yeah, the thing you're going to be able to get in the book too that you just does not make sense and does not work in television is the Daenerys perspective. Like, you're going to be able to hear what she's thinking when she watches Viserion die, right? You're going to be able to get that, as opposed to just watching. I mean, it was all good acting, which actually, and I have to say that the acting in the season has been phenomenal from everybody. But just watching Daenerys and, like, it was like you expected her to be more upset, but the more that I think about it, the more in shock is how they played it at the scene. And then kind of like the anger and the poise that you had later on with John on the boat, like that kind of stuff are things that they're doing really, really well with, but you get so much more, like you said, out of the books when you get to like hear that inner monologue and get to hear that kind of thought process. Because it's something to remember is too, is that the book is told in chapters from different characters' perspectives. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're gonna get that Arya thing, which I don't know whether that would be easier. You know, going back to what we talked about at first, you know, with Arya and Sansa, I don't know whether that would be easier to portray that secretive, that like double cross kind of like manipulating Littlefinger by manipulating Sansa thing, whether you can do that as easily from the first person. I guess you'd have to tell it from Sansa's point of view to tell that story as opposed to Arya's. But Arya has always been a voice in the book, so it's curious. I really liked the character development that we got kind of in that walk, you know, above, beyond the wall with Tormund and Gendry and, Jon Snow and, a couple of the knights, I can't remember their names, Beric Dondarrion and one other guy, the guy with the one eye.
I don't know his name. Yeah, I'm terrible with names.
Yeah, me too. Especially with characters that we've only ever seen like a couple times. And spread over several seasons. But I really enjoyed like the exchange between the Hound and Tormund. You know, it was vulgar, but it was still like, it still had some character to it. And, I really like Tormund. Like when, and that's why I think too, like when you mentioned that when he starts to get taken down and you feel like he's going to die, one of the reasons why you feel that way is because they took the time to say that he's north of the wall with the kings that he's following and he's trying to capture a white to help save the world, but he's walking with the boys joking and talking about drinking and pussy, you know? And it kind of like, it lightens the moment and makes you not necessarily identify with him, but it makes you kind of warm to him as a person, as opposed to just a guy that swings a big axe, right?
He also showcases a behavior that you've never seen before in which he's like screaming for help.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of caught me off guard. It's like, oh crap, he is definitely going down. Like they're showcasing him in a way they haven't before. And again, like this episode was really well crafted, but I think where it fails is where it tries, and where every episode has kind of fallen flat is where it just tries to rush things.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate that it's rushing, because honestly, I don't know if I could watch another 5 seasons of Game of Thrones.
No,
I am happy with there being 2, because now when I go to my friends and recommend the show, I only have to recommend, you know, 6 seasons, 7.5 seasons, as opposed to saying, oh yeah, there's 15 seasons, you're gonna love it.
Yeah,
and it's like no one has that kind of time.
Exactly.
That's so, you know, but at the end there's one final fast forward, which I think we both had a bit of an issue with, and kind of like a really, where just, you know, Benjen shows up out of nowhere.
Yeah, that really bugged me. I kind of wish that he would have been there from the beginning. Like, he should have met them just as they left the wall, as a kind of a bit of a surprise, or a bit of a, I saw you coming, or I've been tracking the White Walkers too, or something.
There was no explanation, and we will never get it, which is kind of feels, again, like if you're a book reader, I'm sure it's a little different, where he does show up and be like, hey, what are you guys doing here? This is dangerous. He's dead, right? Like, is that the idea?
That's the other thing too. He's dead, but he's dead by, I don't remember how. And it's been a fault of mine, is that there's been so much going on in the last couple seasons of Game of Thrones that I can't remember who and where and what died.
The Children of the Forest brought him back.
Either brought him back or they killed him. I can't remember.
But this
is the thing. I spent an entire episode of the Citadel Cafe trying to remember where the hell that the other Stark boy was. He died. He died very visually on screen when Ramsay killed him. And I didn't remember
another
that.
One, though?
No.
There was another younger one?
That was it. That was the end.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I couldn't remember. I thought he was off somewhere else. Because what I was remembering was the last time I saw Rickon in the books and not in the show. Anyway, so stuff I don't remember. I think you're right with the Children of the Forest. But I don't remember how or what his powers are. Not that it matters, because I don't think he made it.
No, he's dead.
Yeah.
Or he's not dead and he comes back.
Or he comes back as a white and John has to face him. Like, I don't know. I mean, he had a cool entrance. Like, I thought that was wicked.
Yeah. Oh, it was amazing. Like, everything about him showing up was really, looked really good.
Yeah.
But maybe they explain it in a way, maybe they explain it in the next episode to kind of give it, because it would have, it would have been weird if you crammed it into this episode to explain why he showed up. So yes. If they touch on it next episode, I have zero qualms with what happened, because him saving John makes a lot of sense in the character.
Yes, you know, in their history over the course of the seasons. Yeah, absolutely.
He was brought back to life to help John. I think that was because he had already saved John once before, right? Mm-hmm. In the middle in the north.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's just he kind of, you know, Benjen shows up, says next to nothing to John, just tells him to get out of there, and he's got this really cool like fire swinger. I thought it was yeah. So awesome.
So I know it's not technically a morning star because morning stars are on the end of sticks, and he just had that was just a long chain. But it was like this green flame morning star. It was really cool. And it was, but again, it's like one of those moments where like you kind of want that to last longer than the 5 minutes, you know, in terms of like him as a character with that thing. And like, that should have been kind of like, it had the same kind of power as that when the Beric Dondarrion and his partner lit up their swords on fire. You know, like they had that lightsaber moment, which is like, well, there's no laser swords in this show, but this is going to be damn close, you know. And they're using the fire to kill the whites.
It was really cool. And yeah. Honestly, I was willing to kind of forgive its hastiness just based on the fact that he made it such a cool entrance and a cool exit.
Yeah. You know? Headshots the whole way in, just kind of bam, bam, bam.
Yeah. Really and John surviving makes perfect sense because, you know, John, like I said before, John is, you know, brought back. They're hammering in, you're not meant to die here. You're meant to live. You're meant to die somewhere else. Yeah. You're meant to blah, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, there wasn't a reason for him to die there. There was a reason for him to fight, but he's needed elsewhere, right?
Yeah.
So him surviving and Benjen having one final, you know, kick at the can was nice because I felt like Benjen dying in the first, you know, disappearing in the first season, coming back in season whenever he came back,
mm-hmm.
Also felt a little forced. Yeah. So him coming back yet again, as long as they explain it in the next episode, even if it's like a, you know, maybe Bran, you know, warged him or something to let him know, or you know, had a bird peck into a, you know, something. I don't know.
That's another thing too to mention. I mean, not to really kind of drag this on forever, but like this all-knowing, all-powerful, smug little brat that thinks he's the Three-Eyed Raven or is the Three-Eyed Raven was of no help to John. You know, when there could have been something somehow, somewhere. You know, like.
Yeah, I mean, Bran is this weird. And but you got to remember he sees all. And if we're going to give this show the credit that it deserves, I think it's proven, you know, time and again that it deserves its credit in its writing. But, you know, if Bran sees all, he probably knows where he needs to focus his attention most on.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, maybe he doesn't find a way to warn John. He finds a way to, you know, help him elsewhere. And yeah. I mean, I don't think we've seen. Well, first off, we haven't seen the usefulness of Bran yet. Mm. He's still kind of this thing. I love that they, and I know this isn't this episode, but I love that they invented the wheelchair to, you know, save him having to drag him around.
Yeah.
I thought that was really a nice touch.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I just think that his worth hasn't been proven yet, and we really need that, like, soon, or else people are just going to be, like, not happy with the fact that Bran is around.
No, because he's not nice. Like, he's not winning any fans, that's for sure.
No, he's kind of like Sansa, but with zero personality.
Yeah.
you know, at least Sansa, like, sometimes sparks up a little bit.
I like Sansa this season. I like Sansa this season. I'm not super happy with how petty she got at the end of the last episode with being jealous of Arya training with Brienne. Like, that to me was old Sansa, and she's come so far.
Yeah.
And it sort of plays up to how Arya is acting and the tendencies that Arya is kind of poking in Sansa now. Like, I get the linear thinking there, but I feel like she's a little bit, well, not a little bit, she's well beyond that sort of stuff. But yeah, like the Bran in the season has not been, he hasn't served a purpose. Like, he hasn't really, he reminds me actually, this isn't a giant spoiler, but he reminds me of Iron Fist from the Marvel Iron Fist series, where basically he just keeps on telling everybody that I am the immortal Iron Fist. And I'm exaggerating, but it might as well be his only line, because that's his answer for everything. You know, it's those conversations shows like The Arrow and stuff like that, where they have 15 conversations over the course of the episode, all of which basically say, we have to stop the bad guys. They have a bomb. We have to disarm the bomb. And like, and they find 16 different ways of saying that, so that none of the dialogue really has any real consequence. It's just the same stuff over and over again. And that's what I'm getting with Bran. He just keeps on telling people, I'm the three-eyed raven. And everybody else is just like, yeah, okay, we get it. Could you just do something beyond saying that you're the three-eyed raven? Because the audience is getting frustrated too. You know, and I think that, you know, it's something that they could have, you know, I mean, he wasn't in this episode on purpose, because if he's in there, then like, well, he knows what's going on because he can see everything. So then he knows what's going on with Littlefinger. So like, you have to eliminate him from some of the stories. Otherwise it's too easy. Or it's like time travel, you know, in sci-fi. Like, I mean, if you write it in too much or you put it too often, it really starts to mess things up. And I think that's probably where that's probably the corner that they're in with Bran, is that because he's this omniscient, you know, three-eyed raven thing, it just becomes really, really complicated really quickly.
It's crazy when you look at all the Starks and just how varied. If Ned Stark was around, he'd be very proud of how varied the kids he's raised are. Like, some of them are dead and died, you know, very much like their father did. But yeah. Just seeing how Bran is this three-eyed raven, Jon is, he went from, you know, Night Watchman to, you know, Night Commander to dead to alive, and now King of the North, and Sansa and Arya and all that fun stuff. It's just such a varied result to just from what started from just the beheading of a father, you know, to now it's kind of this weird journey. And you're right, like, Bran just showing up, I think, for two reasons. We don't want to alienate the audience so much with him just being this, you know, weird jerk. You also don't want to lead on that, oh yeah, he does know everything. So I think we'll get more Bran in the next episode, and he'll certainly be giving us two scoops of raisins. So I think it'll be good.
Well, to move on and kind of wrap this up, one thing that I did catch at the very, very end was this longing glance from Jon to Daenerys, and she has to and she has to explain to him that she can't have kids and that the dragons are her kids. Like, do you get that? Do you understand? And they also, earlier in the episode, had a conversation with Tyrion and Daenerys, talking about this line of succession, how frustrated she was, and she didn't want to talk about the line of succession because she can't have kids, so how the hell do you pass on a crown if you can't have kids to do it? And then Tyrion was talking about other ways. So I think that as much as the audience wants there to be a love connection between Daenerys and Jon, I don't think there's going to be. I think that Daenerys has sorted out that he's a Targaryen.
Good, because she should probably not want to sleep with her nephew.
Well, I don't think she knows that.
Oh, like, no, but, you know. but either way, like, I think the audience, I understand the audience wants what it wants, but really the audience should not want what is clearly being, you know, telegraphed. Now, Jon might not be a Targaryen. He might be something completely different. We don't know. That could be like, what a twist. But for all intents and purposes, he is a Targaryen, and he is, you know, the son of Lyanna Stark and Rhaegon.
Yep.
And he would be the nephew of, you know, Daenerys.
Yep.
And they start to kind of at least form this friendship that could then blossom in what happens very quickly in this show, leading to, you know, that HBO scene that we all are, people are looking for. I don't think the show is going to go down that route, because with Daenerys, they've shied away from her just like blindly going after guys after Denario or whatever his name was. She kind of dropped him like a hot potato, and I think they're going to leave it at that. But you're right. The succession, I think they're going to work on, and maybe it is just Jon and whoever he finds, whatever.
There's a setup there for something that is not going to be a traditional. The people that you want to see get together end up being king and queen and happily ever after. You know what I mean? Like, there's going to be some sort of twist.
And this show doesn't have a happily ever after. Well, you know, it's not
too. I mean,
it's not going to have one. And I think you're right. The succession plan at the end of this whole show will make sense. And we'll have, you know, a smart, you know, it'll have a smart line to it, but it's not going to be your typical, you know, Adam and Eve, you know, pairing where it's just, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Cause the show isn't perfect. And I can't tell you what I think it's going to be, cause I really don't know, but I think it involves Daenerys and Jon and some other folks. Like maybe they mix it in and they give the Starks their due, because Jon being around is thanks to the Starks in some capacity. So we know it won't be a Lannister. It won't be Tyrion, because I don't think Tyrion has, A, I don't think he wants it, and B, he's proven that he's just not capable of it.
Yeah.
He's a good hand, you know?
Yeah. Give him that. And I think that's kind of like, I mean, we're going to see him rise to more success, but I think that's kind of the height at his level. In terms of his rise to power, I think a hand to a ruler is probably the top for Tyrion as far as I'm concerned.
But, you know, to wrap it up though, because I know we've been going long, I just wanted to say it reminded me of a moment in the show where he mentions Jon, and he kind of leads on, like, you know, Tyrion leads on that, oh, I saw the way you two were looking at each other. Mm-hmm. You know, you're looking at each other a little weird. And then Daenerys says, oh, he's too short. And she realizes she's saying that to Tyrion. Loved it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, there were some definite fun moments in this. And it's humor in the way that Game of Thrones should be. Like, it's these very, it's very subtle, very dark. Yeah. No, I thought that was well done too.
Yeah.
But yeah, as you said, we should probably wrap this up. So folks, if you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the Citadel Cafe, you can pop on over to thecitadelcafe.com to find more episodes. You can also email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. The show normally records once a week. We have often recorded on Wednesday. Tonight happens to be a Monday. Game of Thrones tends to push us a little bit faster right now. But you can also find the show on Facebook and Twitter with just the show name. And last but not least, the music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can find everything that I am doing online at joelduggan.com. Please check out forgepublishing.com. We released our first book last week. Daily Paintings, The Art of Piper Thibodeau has been out for the public, and there's just a little bit of time left to take advantage of the launch special, which has a couple of prints and some stickers in there from Piper. Piper also has a ream of prints available on the Forge shop as well, and that's all at forgepublishing.com. We're taking an off week this week, it looks like, with Comics Coast to Coast. Brian Dunaway is very busy getting ready for Dragon Con. If you're going to be in Atlanta in the coming weeks, then go to Dragon Con and say hi to Brian. But beyond that, that's it for me. Ryan, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at rmurphy. If you're looking to see cute pictures of new babies, that's probably coming soon to Twitter near you. Also gamersinpodcast.com. An episode this week is looking up in the air as Jocelyn is having internet issues. However, we should be back the week after, and I'll be playing Super Mario Cross Rapids, which is a new game for the Switch. Looking forward to that one. And then Zombies Ate My Podcast at zombiesatemypodcast.com, where we will be returning to talk about, I don't know, probably some video games. We played a lot of Fortnite, a couple other betas that Lou's been getting his teeth into. So we'll be talking about a lot of video games in the next couple of weeks. But look forward to those episodes coming soon.
Cool, man. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
I'm glad I was able to come back on. I hadn't even thought about coming on. So I'm actually watching Game of Thrones, so this is nice.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.